behind the bench, on the floor, inside the locker room, and in the stands. We're everywhere. Never back off. With everything you need to know about the association. This is Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome to Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Good to be back in Toronto, Jonesy. I think next week, actually, we're going to be in TO for the show as well. It'll be our final show next week before Christmas. We'll be off for the Christmas holidays for a couple of weeks with Christmas and then the New Year as well. But we'll be back with a whole bunch of new episodes every Thursday come the New Year. But we are definitely here for the next 2 weeks and jam-packed tonight. Coming up later on in the program, you're going to hear from national NBA writer from The Athletic, Michael Lee. Also, the radio voice of the Chicago Bulls, Chuck Swirsky. And also, you will hear from Mike Fratello, longtime NBA coach and, of course, television analyst as well, one of the big names in the NBA. And we'll hear from him on this program. But we'd be remiss if we didn't start where things kind of ended, I suppose, on Wednesday night in Toronto when Kawhi Leonard, Jonesy, came back to town for the first time since leaving the Raptors in the offseason. And played, of course, last night with the Clippers and with LA blowing out Toronto. Kind of a weird ball game as well, as it started well in the first quarter and Toronto actually early in the second quarter with a 5-point lead, and then the wheels just completely fell off. You know, whether it be a couple of calls that didn't go Toronto's way, the officiating that they were frustrated with, shots suddenly you stopped falling, and before you blinked, the Clippers were going from down 5 to up 10 to up 15 to up 18 going into the half and up 20 plus in the second half, end up winning the ball game by 20. And as a result, the Raptors have now lost four of their last five, including three straight at home after starting the season undefeated at home, 9-0. The Raptors definitely going through a rough patch right now. And I'll get your thoughts on that maybe a little bit later on, Jonesy. But, you know, let's maybe push Toronto's struggles aside for a second. And the only thing I might say is I don't think Toronto's as bad as they've performed over the course of the last week in this four of the five losses. And maybe they weren't as good as they were performing at the beginning of the year when they were kind of, you know, sort of playing above themselves a little bit, undermanned, lots of injuries, kind of taking, you know, the league by storm in a sense and flying in the face of, you know, the criticism that was out there. Oh, is this team going to be as good without Kawhi Leonard, without Danny Green? Well, they played pretty damn well to start the year. I still say they're among that group of teams that will compete and should compete with Boston, with Philly. I don't think we were expecting Miami, but now we say with Miami, with Indiana, and kind of throw them all in the wash, including the Raptors. The 2 seed, the 3 seed, the 4 seed, the 5 seed. I think all of those teams are kind of in that mix. They're still in the upper tier with the top tier, again, in my opinion, being one team by itself in the East. And that's Milwaukee Bucks. And if Toronto proved one thing last year, though, being the top seed, winning 60-plus games or whatever, doesn't matter if you don't get it done in the postseason. That will be the question now for the Raptors, let alone for Philly or Boston or Miami or Indiana or anybody else. Will you be able to get it done come playoff time? Do you have the horses to get it done come playoff time? And, of course, Jonesy, the Raptors had the horse, the top guy last year in Kawhi Leonard. The biggest difference maker come playoff time. And him in town with the Clips last night, putting aside the victory for LA, it was all about the ring ceremony before the game. And, you know, I don't want to go so far as to sound cheesy, cliche about it and say I was moved, but I was definitely one of those people that just kind of was taking in the moment and appreciating or relishing the moments as we saw them unfold on the big screen at Scotiabank Arena when they rolled the highlight video before Kawhi even got the ring, and we just were able to relive those top moments of 2018, 2019, and specifically those Kawhi moments and the playoff moments and the championship moments and the parade itself. I mean, I thought it was outstanding and just kind of a great celebration that we saw last night.
I thought the ceremony was really, really well done. There was a lot of anticipation, a lot of buildup. But when you look at it and you think back and you reflect on it, it really was pretty Kawhi Leonard-esque. I mean, the video tribute. I mean, I guess a lot of people were excited about it, and Kawhi didn't come across nearly as excited as everybody else did, anticipating it and leading up to it. I mean, look, he was great, and you saw the big smile. But when you think about the ceremony, they were all standing out there, the players that were on the team last year that he shook hands with, leading up to Kyle giving him his ring. There was a video presentation, his highlights of the year. And when it was all done, Kawhi went down the line. He shook everybody's hand. He got to Kyle. That was kind of neat. They shared a special moment there, and they both laughed. And you could see he had a genuine smile on his face of accomplishment and what he had done with the guys last year. And it lasted a few seconds. He turned, he waved to the crowd, and the crowd was responsive in that moment. And then he walked over to the bench and he put the ring away and went back to work. And that's, to me, that's, you know, pretty much typically Kawhi in the way he handles things. It was good. He was excited in the moment. And then it's, let's get back to business. To me, the best Kawhi celebrations I saw were on the night, Eric, when you and I were in Oakland, and to see him dancing in the locker room to Ole, Ole, Ole. That's the image that sticks in my mind of Kawhi's celebration with the goggles on and holding the champagne bottle and moving his arms up and down. To me, that's a big celebratory moment when I think back at it. But it was nice to see him get his ring yesterday, and the way the fans, received him and applauded what he had accomplished here, I think it was great.
You know, Jonesy, the only thing I want to add to everything you just said is I did not realize, maybe you did, and I know you were sitting down on the floor on the broadcast. I was up a little bit higher last night, kind of sitting with the writers, and I still didn't even notice when the highlights ran and they were showing that video, and then the arena went dark. And I'm sure folks listening right now either have already seen it on the highlight reels on Sportsnet, or they've seen it on YouTube, they've seen it on social media, Twitter, Instagram, otherwise. I did not realize when the arena went dark for that game 7 shot, the 4 bouncer on the rim against Philadelphia, I did not take notice of what the lights were actually doing and recreating the footsteps, the path that Kawhi took from the top of the key, basically, or the top of the arc, across the court into the corner in front of the Raptor bench, and then elevating for the shot, and then all of a sudden, boom, the lights went back on in Scotiabank Arena. I did not realize that they had recreated his path to that shot in the moment last night. So it was kind of neat to go back and watch it through social media or on Sportsnet or otherwise, and to see it again, earlier this morning. And I've now watched it actually 2 or 3 times over the course of today as well. So I thought a fantastic job by the Toronto Raptors, by Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment, the Game Ops folks, big shout out to them. And again, I think it was just a perfect way to kind of end things. And maybe we put a cap on things now, as I said to you earlier. Maybe this just kind of finally, says, all right, Kawhi's gone. He's playing for the Clippers. It's gone, but not forgotten. It's something that we perhaps should still be celebrating, the fact that, he had that 1 year and he came in and he had one job to do and he went and did that job. And then, he left and he went home and he went to Los Angeles. He went to Southern California. But I don't think that you should necessarily forget everything he did for you in 1 year or not celebrate it. And I think that's what most of the fans felt last night as well, because it certainly did seem like a celebration and a recognition for most of the people in attendance. And in fact, that segues perfectly into my conversation that I had with national NBA writer Michael Lee. We spoke predominantly about Kawhi and about looking ahead, to the future for the Raptors, but also kind of living in the present, yet still respecting the past and respecting and appreciating what you had in that moment in time for 12 months with Kawhi Leonard and with the championship and still living this season as the reigning champs. My conversation with Michael Lee. Michael, it was quite the scene last night in Toronto. Forget the outcome of the game. Just in general, seeing Kawhi come back to Toronto. And I mean, I know it's kind of been beaten to death, especially by us in the Toronto media and broadcasting. But do you think that kind of finally puts a bow on the story now being told of the year that was and the departure in the offseason and everything that kind of wrapped into Kawhi being a Raptor and then now being a Clipper?
Maybe, but maybe not. Because I think that the one thing that you know, Kawhi is always going to have a connection to Toronto. He's always going to have a connection to his community. No matter where his career goes, it's going to be a situation where he won a championship here. So these people are bonded with him forever, especially for the way he elevated the franchise and, you know, made it a legitimate championship organization for the first time, which is something everyone had sort of really wanted to see occur. I mean, you think about the history of, you know, sports in Toronto and, you know, the Maple Leafs haven't won for over 50 years. The Blue Jays haven't won in over 25 years. And the Raptors, the organization that's only been around 25 years, now is the championship, you know, example for the entire city. Kawhi's, it's never going to be done. I guess it's good this end of the year for 2019, but I think that 2029, people will still be talking about what happened this year.
It's interesting you bring up that bond. I know Doc was talking about that on Wednesday night as well before the game, saying that bond you have with not just players and coaches, but with an organization, with a city, and that will be there forever. And, you know, until the day you die, you know, that's, hey, I did this that one year. And, I mean, we've seen it in other cities where that's just a special bond that's never going to be broken.
Yeah, the guys that are now with the Raptors, they're made men now. You know, Kawhi and Kyle Lowry are still close. I mean, they connect, they communicate through text every now and then throughout the course of the season, because that's something that brought them together in a way that, you know, just playing, you know, 82 games never will. When you go through the grind and you have the lucky bounces, you have, you know, all of those experiences where you're down 0-2 against Milwaukee, where you're, you know, down 2-1 in Philadelphia, you know, opportunities when your season could come to an end and things work out in your favor. Those are things that really make you connect in a way that you it's unique, it's special. And I think that's one of the reasons why his return is different than other guys where, you know, fans are upset and they're angry and there's a lot of bitterness. There's a lot of joy with what Kawhi was able to bring them. And I think even from his perspective, even no matter where his career goes, he'll always know that Toronto was the place where not only did he win a championship, but that he was the guy who led a team to a championship. Because it's different than when he was in San Antonio and he had to defer to Duncan and Parker and Ginobili and all these superstars. You know, here he was the man.
And
he had to carry that load. And he'll always, if he never wins another title or if he does win another title, he'll know that Kawhi became the man in Toronto.
It's interesting to get your perspective as well from someone outside the city, connected with the league, but just not being in Toronto or a Torontonian, because I hear from some folks, even Toronto fans, that are saying, all right, you know what? I love the year that we had with him, and there's no denying he helped us win a championship, but can we not just move on? Then there are others that are saying, well, no, hold on. Forget about moving on. Like, let's still appreciate and relish in what we did have, whether he left or not.
There's no need to move on. I mean, you move on from something you're upset about.
Yeah.
You cherish things that are beautiful. You cherish things that will always have a lasting memory. I'm sure that if you had like a summer fling with some, you know, some person that will always stay with you, you always have those fond memories. You may never want to go back and date that person, but you will always have that recollection in your mind of something that was a special moment that will always be magical for you. I think that there's no need to move on from that. Your life will eventually force you to move on in other ways. But there are certain things that you just have to appreciate. Now, I know, like, for myself, like, I don't have an NBA team. I'm a baseball, I'm a Royals fan, and the 2015 World Series will always be something that's magical for me as just a fan. Like, I was there for Game 5.
Right.
I have the video of the last out on my phone. Like, I was there to see, and it's something that, I mean, the Royals stink now. They're not any good. But I will always have that as something that I got to experience. And I think fans should just, there's no need to move on from it. It's just something that you should just cherish and recognize the difficulty, the luck that's involved with winning a championship, and just how special it is to go through that and to be the last team standing.
It's funny you talk about the being a sports fan, and the only team I'm still a fan of truly is the Buffalo Bills.
I know.
And folks, it's radio, you can't see the face that Michael just made, but four straight Super Bowls, I wasn't at any of them, but like to even just be able to still appreciate those four straight and just getting there four straight, it sucks that you didn't win any of them.
This is a hard sport. I mean, it's a hard thing to get through. I mean, everyone talks about playing fewer games and, you know, eliminating this and that and cutting back on the schedule. And it's like, well, there's a reason why it's 82 games, and there's a reason why it's hard, and there's a reason why there's an appreciation for winning a championship, because, like, if it was easy, there wouldn't be one team standing. Everybody would just be winning. Like, it's it's hard, and you realize, you go back and you think about all the things that had to break their way for a championship to come. I just feel like, yeah, it's a good way to end 2019 with Kawhi being here one last time, but I don't think that it has to ever stop. I think it's something that could always be cherished and celebrated.
I don't know if there's any way to truly quantify this or say with certainty that, yes, this is the case, but when you talk about the term the residue of winning has been used around here, the bond that you were speaking of, how much do you think that factors into the success Toronto has had early this season without Kawhi and even without, for 10-plus games, Kyle and Serge, and the fact that you've got a lot of chemistry with a lot of guys that have been around and that now know truly what it takes to win?
Yeah, they know what it takes, but they've been knowing what it takes for, you know, even before Kawhi got here.
Yep.
And I think that's what made it so special, because I think one of the things that's sort of ignored or overlooked is that, you know, everyone dismissed the fact that the Raptors were 17-5 on the games that Kawhi was load managed. Well, they went 17-5 in the game that Kawhi was load managed. Like, there was already a pretty solid foundation that was laid out from, you know, Dwayne Casey, from DeMar even being here, to guys who are still here like Kyle Lowry, and guys who came up through, I guess, the farm system like Van Vliet and Pascal Siakam, where you're used to a certain standard you have to meet. Now, obviously, they've been stamped with a championship now, but if you look at, this is a team that's been winning 50 games. This is a team that, if LeBron's not there, maybe they have a chance to go to a finals before Kawhi gets here. But LeBron was here, and LeBron crushed all that. So I think it says a lot for what the Raptors have been, because I think that maybe from some outsiders, they may think that the Raptors were no good, and then Kawhi showed up and they got good. But that wasn't the case. This was a 58-59 win team that added, that were swapped DeMar for Kawhi, which elevated it to a championship level. But they were pretty close. You know, they were top four, top eight team, you know, for like 5 years in a row. I think it was just, it's a continuation of that more so than the championship is what, you know, elevated them. I think it just, it sort of validated all the work that they had been doing over the years and sort of confirmed that they were already there. But I think this is a program that's been building for a long time.
All right, last one for you, and you may have just answered this in the way you just perfectly described it. Is Toronto now at a point where, I know for years, the prime example around the league was certainly San Antonio, the San Antonio way, the Popovich way. I mean, we've seen other examples in the history of the league where this is the way they play. Does Toronto now have it? This is the way they do it. This is the way they play. This is the culture they have, and et cetera. Is there a Raptor way now?
I would say so, because I think if you look at it this way, this is what makes it all kind of spectacular or real startling. The Spurs were always the unbreakable franchise. They were always the organization that Tim Duncan retires, they win. You know, Manu Ginobili, you know, Tony Parker leave, they still a successful team. They're still a playoff team. Kawhi's the guy that broke them. You know, I mean, they're still in the playoffs last year, but now they're struggling. They're not really on that same level as a championship team. And you look at the Raptors, he leaves them, and they're still respected, which is really unique. And I think it says a lot, not to say that what they've built is stronger than what the Spurs built. I just think it just says a lot about that people should appreciate what the Raptors have, that a player as dynamic, as incredible as Kawhi, arguably the best player in the game, leaves, and you're still a top 14 potentially in your conference. I just think it's a credit to what's been built and the standard that's been set. Like, guys aren't settling. Guys aren't going to accept that, you know, and I loved it. I thought that they were kind of delusional, you know, during the summertime. Every time you said, oh, you lost Kawhi, and everybody's like, yeah, that's fine. We're still going to defend our title. Yeah, we're still the champs. And it's like, oh, that's cute. Yeah, you guys are the champs. That's fine. But they believed it. And if you look at just all the pieces that came together, you know, before they had no lottery picks, these are guys who are used to being counted out. These are guys who have been overlooked and have sort of been discarded and not being taken seriously for a long time. So I think when it comes to having a chance to win a championship and validate your career, at that point, you know all that hard work was worth it, but you also know that all the people that doubted you and didn't think much of you are really looking foolish right now.
That was national NBA writer Michael Lee. Before we go to break here, Jonesy, we should mention as well, again, as we talked about off the top, Toronto has lost four of the last five, still awaiting word as to the status of Fred VanVleet and if he's going to be able to get back in the lineup at some point in the next game or two, hopefully, fingers crossed, in time for Saturday's game against the Brooklyn Nets. If not, the Raptors' next game would then be on Monday when they play host to the Cleveland Cavaliers. After that, it's next Wednesday when the Raptors are in Detroit to face the Pistons. So that's the next three games for the Raptors, and that will bring us into our next show next Thursday. But again, fingers crossed that Fred VanVleet can get back healthy, because it seems clear that in his absence, the offense has certainly struggled. And obviously, you got to get Kyle Lowry back on track. Serge Ibaka, the two of them combining one of 16 on Wednesday night against the Clippers. The Raptors need them at the top of their respective games, no doubt about that. That's an understatement. But maybe, just maybe, if this team can kind of find their way offensively again, we're starting to see this club maybe turn a corner in terms of the health. If Freddie gets back, now Patrick McCaw is back. Hopefully Stanley Johnson is closer. And then you're really only dealing with Matt Thomas. But there needs to just be kind of a collective wake-up call, I think, from the energy standpoint. And that's something that both Lowry and Siakam discussed on Wednesday after the game, saying, hey, we're not doing necessarily a ton of bad things. Shots aren't falling right now. Our defense is still pretty good, but our energy is lacking. And our energy is where we maybe kind of make our name for ourselves and kind of beat teams with our energy and our hustle. And that has to pick up. So we'll see if that can be the case again on Saturday when the Raptors host the Brooklyn Nets. But when we come back, we will, hook up with an old friend. You've heard from him on this show many times before in the past, and earlier this week we had a chance to chat with Chuck Swirsky. That conversation comes up next on Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand, absolutely free.
Welcome back to Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. We're going to get right into it because it's a long interview. I had a chance to chat with the radio voice of the Chicago Bulls. He was the television and radio voice of the Toronto Raptors for 12 years, talking Raptor memories, 25th anniversary season, last year's championship, and so much more with Chuck Swirsky.
Chuck, we've done this a few times over the years, but we're doing it again because it's always good to catch up with you. And here we are in the 25th anniversary season for the Toronto Raptors, basking in the glow still of the championship won last year.
And by the way, while we're recording this interview, yeah, one of my all-time favorites, Adrian Griffin, just walked by. I love his posts on Facebook. He's a great read. He has a beautiful family. His wife is gorgeous. His daughter's at UConn. I mean, I love Griff. And I listen, I'm going to deviate for a second. This is a true story. So the Raptors are playing Boston, and it's his rookie year, and he shuts down Vince Carter.
Yep.
And I went, this is a true story. I went to him. I said, listen, you don't know me. I don't know you. I got to give you props. You did an unbelievable job on Vince Carter. That's a true story.
Now, he's nodding his head. I just put you in for 1 second, Griff. You remember this then? And he's not lying. I mean, the Swirsky would never lie. But
it's a true story. But Vince got me back in Boston. No, he hit a game winner on me. Yes, fade that out of bounds. He probably jumped about 6 feet in there. And then Rick Pitino yelled at me after the game, like, why didn't you do something? Yeah. I said, do what?
Well, see, that's the game where Pitino said, Larry Bird ain't walking through the door. Kevin McHale ain't walking through the door. That clip that you can find on YouTube. Yeah. That was at the expense of Griff and the Boston Celtics when Carter hit the game winner. But see, I like the glass half full, and that's why I wanted to give Griff his due, because he actually beat, and I think that was opening night, if I'm not mistaken, at the old Air Canada Center. So there you go. There's a little
trivia. We're going to let Coach go now because he's got work to do. It's interesting, though, you bring that up.
See, there you go.
And this is why I love doing this stuff, because none of this stuff is pre-planned, folks. This is all ad lib, off the cuff. And when you talk about Rick Pitino, selfishly, the first thing that comes to my mind, it's the only coach, Chuck, I think in my 22 years now covering the NBA, I've ever had, I don't even know if it's fair to call it a confrontation with.
Really?
But in a scrum, when I was interning, I believe, and I asked a question after the game, and he looked at me and said, listen, son, and I just instantly, I'm 22, 23, and I cut him off and I said, listen, only one person can call me son. That's my dad. Actually, two. My dad and my mom. Don't ever call me son again, please. Said, I'm here as a reporter. Don't address me as son. And he kind of, his eyes bugged out and looked at me and like, okay, this, I don't know who you are, but that's, it's always stuck with me. I've never seen the man since, but that's one thing that's always stuck with me, Chuck.
Wow.
Don't call me son.
Well, I mean, actually, my first broadcast as a Raptor announcer.
In Boston, with, right?
Well, it was at Sky Dome first in a preseason game.
Right.
Then we went to Boston for another preseason game. And guess what, Eric? We opened up in Boston. And that was Vince's first game and Paul Pierce's first game.
Now,
February 5th, 1999. But that's just me remembering dates and names.
And Vince had a shot, I believe, fourth quarter, wasn't it? Kind of falling out of bounds almost on the sidelines in the Garden, correct?
And what happened in that game is Kevin Willis played his first game as a Raptor and had 28 points, 16 rebounds, hurt his back. His back stiffened up, and then he's on the plane, and he's lying on the floor of the plane right where we're sitting, and he goes, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to go tomorrow night against the Wizards. And so, sure enough, he couldn't go, and Yogi Stewart made the start.
All right.
We lost that game, by the way. I know it's hard to
believe. There were a lot of losses back in the day.
Yeah.
Not so much last year, though.
The lockout year.
No, lockout year was good.
23 and 27. We were in contention until the last couple of weeks, and then things kind of unraveled for a lot of different reasons.
Okay. I'm gonna I'm gonna start.
Okay, you start me on Raptor trivia, and I still the tank is full.
Okay, but hold on. Do you want me to go chronological here and go through kind of the
you
bad times before
this
we get to the good times?
Show.
Or do we want to start
what do you
with
think Nelson Millman's gonna get
well,
on
you say,
the phone and say,
you
"Be
say,
quiet"?
Nelson Millman, man, he's enjoying the retirement.
I know that.
He's actually still teaching, though.
He's teaching.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, molding young minds.
And
right
now. Doesn't he paint? He's an artist, or maybe I got the wrong Nelson Millman. I think maybe he goes bowling.
I don't know about either of those. I don't know about painting or bowling. Okay. Nelson, if you're listening, let me know if you're a painter or not. All right. You said it's my show, and you're just derailing this thing all over the place.
No.
Let's work backwards, then.
Okay.
We're going
to
start
with
the good.
You want to talk about Holly Place?
Holly Street. Yeah, 40 Holly.
Yes.
Young and
Franz. Is Franz still there?
Franz, I think, is still there. Fox and
Firkin.
It looked
like a little submarine.
Yep.
So hopefully it's still there and didn't sink.
Oh, boy. All right,
okay,
so last year, Chuck.
Yes.
Speaking of Toronto,
yes.
And I'm on the buses for the parade.
Yes.
There's like 2.5 million people. I'm doing interviews on the parade, looking out at this mass of.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. And to think that I had that view that the players had.
Yes.
Honestly, the amount of times I just literally was pinching myself, going, I can't believe this. I can't believe this view. You're sitting at home watching this. I'm sure you thought it would come one day, but did you see it coming this quickly, in a sense? Some people might go, 24 years is not quick. But for it to come together the way it did for Toronto, and then the culmination of all these memories that we're speaking of, good and bad, highs and lows over the years, what were you thinking sitting at home just watching that unfold?
Yeah, well, you know what, Eric? I did think it was going to come together just because of the timing of everything, the play of Leonard, the trade with Gasol, the depth of your club, how the Eastern Conference, even when Milwaukee took a 2-0 series lead, I thought the Raptors were still going to win that series. I thought Nick Nurse coached a great, great playoff run, and putting that wall around Giannis was brilliant. And so, I mean, I'm happy for the franchise, obviously, for Judy and Larry Tannenbaum, who I have the utmost respect for. But you know what, Eric, the first thing that went through my brain, all the people, whether they worked at the old MLSC for one day or 10 years or 25 years now, that they were a part of building the foundation for the sport in the country. And I really got very emotional after game six, watching this on television, that in some small way that, my name is attached to the history of the franchise, as is yours and others, because this was an infant, and you crawl, and then you walk, and then you kind of pace yourself, and then you run, and then you accelerate in this club at the apex of success. I mean, 25 years from now, Eric, you're going to be going back. You'll still be working, but you're going to remember where you were, what time it was, 50 years from now, whatever. They're going to have a celebration recognizing that team every 10 years, 25 years, 50 years, whatever the case may be, as they do here in Chicago for the Jordan era.
What do you think about the next 25 years? Not just for Toronto, but the NBA.
Will I still be alive in 25 years?
You better be.
I hope so. So where do I think this game is going? I'll tell you where I think this is going. I think they're going to eliminate a player on each team on the floor. I think you're going to see 4-on-4.
Really?
because I think these players are so big now, there's not enough room for this game to really develop. And I'll tell you another thing, what I do like about the game is the players are wonderful. They're skilled, the coaching's at an all-time high, everything is great, young kids are playing the sport, all those things, fine. I don't like the game where it's headed with three-point shooting. This game has become either a layup or a three-point shot. And I think what's taken away from this game is the creativity, ball handling skills, taking a mid-range jumper, the ability to use that skill set to take somebody off the dribble. The power game is non-existent anymore with a big, because now he's in high school AAU ball and he's told you got to play 18 feet away and not 8 feet away. We're not going to develop a pivot and a drop step. We're not going to have you work on curls or hooks. We're going to have you face up, you know, from the basket. And I just don't. I think the beauty of the sport is I've got a 6'10", 6'11 player. Let's take advantage of that player by saying, okay, you've got a height advantage on him. Let's use it.
All right, last one for you here, Chuck.
Why should a 6'11 player, Eric, become me at 5'8"?
Are you 5'8"?
Maybe.
Last one for you here.
Yes.
I'm going to go back to the Raptors to end it on a Toronto question. Rapid fire, putting you on the spot.
Burlington. Yeah. Yes. Dairy Queen. Yes. Well, Applebee Line. Yes.
All right, okay, so, ready?
Yes.
Who has their jersey retired first?
Vince Carter. Please. And listen, it broke my heart when he left and how he left and all that.
Yep.
But you know what? You work through those things. You mature on all parts. He should be the first Raptor to have his jersey retired.
Okay. I disagree with that.
Why they're struggling vanilla. That's why you're Eric Smith.
I think it should be based on what he did now last year, Kyle Lowry. And his longevity with the team.
Lowry should have his jersey retired. Just make DeRozan sure. Should.
I agree with that totally.
What about Kawhi Leonard?
I wouldn't retire his jersey.
No, I agree. I would not.
You want to honor him, put pictures up?
Here's the other thing I would do. Every year, a lot of this generation probably never saw him play, I would have had, as an organization, the Alvin Williams Heart and Hustle Award. It would go to the Raptor player who demonstrates all those ingredients of what it takes to be a Raptor. You know, if you want to be a Raptor, here's what we are expecting out of you. This, this, and this. And by the way, you Google Alvin Williams. He sacrificed his body, not like once a week or twice a month. He did it every night.
Well, so, I get the honor, the pleasure of working with him now as a broadcaster and doing a lot of stuff with Sportsnet. And I've said to him to his face many times, if there's one guy who I'd want my kid to play like, or if there's one jersey I'd want to buy, it'd be number 20 for the Raptors.
Boogie Williams. I called his triple-double game against Atlanta.
We try to forget about triple-doubles back in the day, though, because Ben Uzo essentially cost the Raptors. But we won't go there. We could keep going on this, Chuck, but we'll end it right there. Thanks again, Swirsk, and we'll do this again sometime soon.
Yes, thank you. And Pascal Siakam, by the way, is a great player. And so that was great. See, timing's everything. It was just
how come you didn't pull him in like you did with Chris?
I should have. I should have talked about New Mexico State. Well, I've been to Las Cruces.
You brought in Griff, but you didn't bring in
it's
Spicy
It's a nice
tea.
Community, a little desert, but it's okay.
That was the radio voice of the Chicago Bulls, an old friend, Chuck Swirsky. When we come back, Jonesy goes to work one-on-one with Mike Fratellowitz, Hoops, on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. This is Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Jonesy, we're going to jump right into this one in a second as well. But first, I want to get your thoughts on what I just brought up with Swirsky in our last segment with Chuck Swirsky, talking about jersey retirement and as it relates to the Toronto Raptors. I kind of tipped my hand. I said to Chuck that I feel that Kyle Lowry has now earned his spot as being the guy that maybe should go in first and foremost before anybody else in Raptor history. It should be Lowry that has his jersey hanging from the rafters. After that, Vince, then probably DeMar. And I think it ends there. I don't think I'm in the camp that would hang Kawhi Leonard's jersey, honor him
respect him, have those pictures hanging up in the hallways for years to come, bring him back as an alumni one day when he retires. But I don't know that I'm retiring the jersey of a guy that was here for 1 year. And with due respect, I'm not sure that I'm retiring Chris Bosh's jersey. Fabulous player, all-star player, did a lot of great things. I'm on the fence with that one. But anyway, your thoughts. What do you think about this whole jersey retirement stuff?
Eric, that is a really great question. There are a lot of people that aren't for jersey retirements. I mean, you look at Boston, they've got so many jerseys retired that it's hard to find one to wear at times. But, I mean, I would be all for honoring jerseys as opposed to not retiring them. So, you know, a young player coming in knows that he has worn the jersey of somebody who has, you know, made an impact or had a, you know, had a big impact on the franchise. So I'm more for honoring them. But if you were going to retire, and this probably wouldn't be popular amongst a lot of people, and I would say Vince Carter should be the first one retired. And I know there are going to be howls, but hear me out here. Let me explain this. First off, I think what he did for the franchise in a time when the Raptors were fighting for credibility. And remember, Vancouver lost their franchise. They moved, and it wasn't because of attendance or anything like that. You know, new guy bought the team, wanted to move them. He moved them. You know, people thought that Toronto would not last. They didn't know it would last here. I had people tell me that they thought it might last 5 years, 4 or 5 years, and then be gone. Well, within 5 years, the Raptors made the playoffs, and Vince Carter was a big part of that. He put a mark on the franchise that, you know, helped establish the groundwork. He with a bunch of vets, you know, when you think of Oakley and Willis and Del Curry and Antonio Davis and all of those guys, they helped lay Muggsy Bogues, D. Brown, they helped lay the foundation. Vince was a big part of that. And I know people will point to, well, it didn't the way it ended and he wanted out and they say he quit on the team. Hey, you find me a place where it ends great for every guy. That's not the case. And I know, you know, people will look at, and this is probably my second guy. It would be Kyle Lowry. People would say, well, Lowry should be first. Well, look, here's the thing. I don't think it's going to end poorly with Kyle Lowry. And yes, he does have a championship here, but Vince helped put the franchise on the map. You go back and you talk to people from, I don't know, a generation from of 20 years, from 96 to 2016, or even up to 2020 now, that, you know, 25 years in there. A lot of people, when they think of the Raptors, if they're old enough to remember, I mean, I'm not even talking about the kids that grew up with Vince. A lot of people will put that mark on Vince. And yeah, again, they'll complain about the way he left. But to me, Vince deserves to have that first jersey retired. And then I think Kyle is next because of his commitment. And here's the other thing with Vince. The Raptors drafted Vince. You know, they drafted him. Well, they drafted Antoine Jameson and traded for Vince. But Vince was theirs, and he was homegrown. The one thing I'll say about Kyle Lowry is, although he's been terrific, and he might be, and here's a distinction here, he might be the greatest Raptor of all time, not necessarily the guy jersey would retire first, but Kyle wasn't drafted. There were two other teams before Kyle came to Toronto, and he was almost out of Toronto. And again, we don't know how it's going to end with Kyle. I don't think it'll end poorly, but Kyle would be the second one for me. And then I think DeMar would be next. And the same thing for some of those same reasons. His impact on the franchise, he was drafted in Toronto, what he helped accomplish in Toronto. Now, he doesn't have the chip, but he sure helped set them up. So I think those would be the order, 1, 2, 3. I wouldn't retire Kawhi's. I might honor it because of what he did here, and he helped win the championship. He had a great impact on the franchise. And then Chris Bosh would be the same way. And for you numbers people, Vince Carter, and I heard this the other day, Vince Carter has 15 season or career records in the Toronto Raptors franchise history in their record book. That's more than Bosh. It's more than Lowry right now. It's more than DeRozan. And you know, Kawhi only has a couple, and they were of obviously season records. So, you know, Vince gets my nod if you're retiring a uniform first.
All right, I could say more, but you know what? We got to get to your Mike Fratello interview. So we're going to – this will be another topic, another discussion for another day. Before the show ends, we want to give a chance to obviously hear from one of the greats in the game, one of the all-time great coaches and longtime analysts as well. Jonesy had a chance to catch up with the czar, Mike Fratello.
Coach, always good to see you. I guess my first question would be, as you're from a vintage like me, an old head. Doc says it's called sitting and rest, the new term load management. What are your thoughts on it? Just if you could give me a general kind of brief, like, I mean, we could discuss it for an hour, but your thoughts on it.
It's a little bit like the three-point shot. Do you want to shoot 43s a night, or would you rather get higher percentage shots? But that's the trend. That's the way it's going right now. And either get on board or they're moving on by, as
right.
they say. And
right.
that's with staffs expanding the way they have, responsibilities now go to different people. Whereas you know, years ago, it used to be all on one guy who did Joe O'Toole. For me, back with the Atlanta Hawks,
right.
was the guy that not only got every hotel room, every plane flight, did the per diem, did the taping, did the treatment, did the rehab. It was a one-man show. But now you've got specialists in every one of these areas. And if you're going to hire somebody and he's a specialist, he says, this is what we should be doing, then you have to listen to
right.
him. Well, don't hire him.
Yeah. Coach, let's talk about the league. Have you ever seen this, I guess for lack of a better term, kind of parody, the fact that so many teams feel like they could, and right now a lot of teams feel like they could when you look at them be playing for the gold ball in June? I mean, we're only at the quarter pole, but there's a lot of teams that look good right now early on.
There's only a few teams that have a chance of winning a championship. What we have is a lot of bad teams right now, and that's because we have a number of people that have made decisions that we're starting over again.
Right.
But starting over again doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to be good eventually. There are teams I can name. Chicago, when they decided, okay, after the Michael Jordan year went by, it took them forever to
yeah.
try and get back
yeah.
to it. And yeah. they're still trying to be good right now. So stripping things down and starting over again may not work.
Are y'all doing an interview?
Go ahead, Doc.
This is the guy that drafted me. You know that?
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
And he was also the guy that told you guys, if I catch you cheering for Larry Bird on the bench, you're going to be in trouble, right?
That was good. They shouldn't have had him to tell us that.
Hey, Coach, let's take a little side detour. I watched that game, the 60-point game, and he was phenomenal. But like coaches now, you got a game plan to try and stop these guys.
You have to make a decision. Is your team defensive philosophy enough to keep the guy under control and give you a chance to win, or do you need to take the ball out of the star's hands to try and give you a better chance? And some guys aren't willing to do that.
One of the guys that's been doing that is Nick Nurse. He's done a really good job of, well, you know, we saw what he did to LeBron, to Kawhi, to Lillard. They held Embiid scoreless. But it's not good enough just to take the ball out of one guy's hands. You have to also continue to defend the others.
No question. If you are just going to take the ball out of one guy's hands but let other guys have wide open looks at the basket, that's not a good thing. It's not going to work that way. You have to get people in the mentality of, if we're taking the ball out of somebody's hands, we then have to rotate and cover for each other on the next pass and the next pass. So it's a sequence of things that have to take place. But I admire Nick Nurse for the fact that he's willing to try something that so many people aren't willing to try because they're afraid they'll get criticized if it doesn't work.
How impressed are you with him in that last year? He was given a good team, and the idea was kind of just keep the car on the road and get it to the finish line, and he did that because it's harder than people think.
He did a fantastic job. He came in under a lot of pressure, following up on the coach of the year. And then he's handed the keys, as you said, to the car. And he did exactly what they were hoping he would do. The players responded, and the city's got its first championship.
Mike, looking at the Raptors themselves, when you look at how they've started, they're playing with a chip on their shoulder. And Doc talked about the championship rub when you win a title, how it plays out the next year. Are you seeing a lot of that in Toronto right now?
they're still going through a big adjustment period here because of the two players that they brought in from different franchises not having a chance early on to play with each other because of, you know, the injury rehab process taking place. So they have not gotten close to what they're going to be. They get some practice days in. Nobody practices anymore, yeah, you know. Yeah. But if they get some in, Doc can put more of his schemes in. He can more set plays in that they can run. Right now, they're playing defense, and then offense kind of comes after the fact.
Mike, there is this concept that people kind of forget about when it comes to, you know, you get to the playoffs. You can improve. That's a season into itself. And some people forget about that, that you can, you have time to focus and make adjustments and improve over the course of the playoffs, too.
That's the idea. That's why you scout teams as much as you do, because you take the tendencies and you gear your game plan towards those tendencies to take it away from a team. So it's hard to get an open shot in the playoffs because they know where you're going just as well as you do.
Mike, always great to talk with you. Good to have you in Toronto, and I'm sure we'll see you down the road.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
That was Jonesy one-on-one with Mike Fratello. We got to get out of here, folks. Thanks to Mike Fratello, also Michael Lee, and Chuck Swirsky. Thanks to our entire production crew as well. Easy for me to say. For Paul Jones, I'm Eric Smith. This has been Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.